Hi, and welcome to Prague Will Find a Way, Praguecast. I'm Jonathan Block.
And I'm Jay Valade.
And today, our main topic is going to be Prague record stores, or really it's more our experiences in record stores buying Prague music, our early days, and just memories,
Sure. We're reminiscing.
Reminiscing today. But first, we got a couple of talk about news, but first... record store day just happened recently, and Jay's got a couple purchases.
I only got two.
A real question is, did you go looking for more and you only got two, or were you looking?
No, these were the only two that I really wanted to get.
Okay.
So I got the Yes Live from the Yale Bowl, 1971, and it's a pretty cool...
Now, does it come relic'd like this?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
I didn't beat this up.
No, okay. All right. No. Or okay,
for those who are listening and not watching, it looks like an old bootleg from 1971, where it's a white sleeve with looks like a wraparound 11x17 blue photocopy of the band and the list of songs, which is typical of back in the 70s and 80s of what an old bootleg would look like.
But it's totally a, it's so, I remember this. I mean, I remember it when this would have been more the whole sleeve rather than just part of the sleeve.
But sometimes they did wrap the back.
They definitely wrapped the back.
On the front.
Yeah, you know, it depends. Swing and pig, a lot of swing and pig stuff. But it does definitely bring back memories of...
Yeah. And it's cool because what they did was they kind of made it look like it's a beat up old
it's relic sleeve. It's totally a good
it's got
facsimile
a patina
of
to it.
Today. Oh, totally. Totally. It's been stored and it's pulled out a lot.
Four songs, July 24th, 1971. Yours is No Disgrace. I've Seen All Good People. Clap, Classical Gas as one song, and Perpetual Change.
And it's the Yale Bowl. Right?
Yale Bowl. I think they were opening for Grand Funk or something like that. And it's just a lot of fun.
We're not an American band.
For those who are not completists and don't need the vinyl, the music is available as part of the Yes album box set that just came out. But they released this as a vinyl kind of memento for those of us who are... into this kind
and
of
and the whole box including that is available streaming too.
Yes.
So
So it's not like, but it was a record store day exclusive, meaning that it was only available through record store day.
All right.
They're not going to do a wide release afterwards.
And was this worldwide or this was just a US release?
I think it was worldwide, and I think that it was like 4,500 copies.
Okay.
Something like that.
All right.
I went up to a record store in Bethel called Disc and Dat to get it, and
I wish I knew you were going. I would have gone.
I didn't think you were a vinyl buyer.
I'm not a buyer, but I'm a I'm a
an
looker.
Event?
No, a looker. I like looking at things. I don't have to own them. Okay. I think they're cool to look at.
Yeah.
So next year.
Well, it's kind of funny because
remember me.
I will. There's like a line out the door.
Oh, well, lines?
And you wait in line, and then they kind of usher you.
I'm rethinking this.
Yeah, they usher you through, and then you get to, they have all the albums out. People are just picking out what they want.
What's record store day after like?
Right? It's whatever's left over. Because I was also looking for the Stephen Wilson remix album, which is not an exclusive, but it was only 2,200 copies. But I don't know that they're necessarily going to put it out on vinyl again. I think they reserved the right to, but it was really hard to find. Nobody had it, or they either didn't stock it, or when I went up to a record store in Milford afterwards, and the line was bananas.
What record store is in Milford?
I can't remember the name of it.
Anyways, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
But the guy's like, oh, yeah, it's right over there. And he goes, oh, I must have sold it. And I'm like, oh, geez. So I called various other record stores that were on the record store day list, and nobody had it. They either had it and sold it, or they never ordered it. So it was kind of hard to come by. So I ended up getting it on the internet.
Oh, so you did? Okay.
I eBayed it like the next day.
So did you have to pay a substantial amount?
No, just it had shipping on it.
Okay.
So all very expensive to begin with.
Yeah. And if nobody buys it in the first day, then that initial rush is done.
Right. Or they couldn't find it on the first day and they go to the internet immediately and they try to get it. And I've got it for around the same price.
A reasonable price.
But then other people had it on for like window. $90. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I don't want it for that much.
So
so it is basically remixes of, it's called Harmonic Divergence. And it is remixes of all the songs from his most recent album, The Harmony Codex. And
what's the back look like?
It's the same kind of thing. It's like the album cover of the thing, but they did it with all these.
Can we show the crowd? So it's very cool. It's those are Boss pedals, and you can tell by the color. You can tell by the color, actually, what kind of pedal it is. You know?
Okay.
That's a Terra Echo. That's a phaser. That looks like a delay, you know, an overdrive, a tremolo, you know, choruses. Anyways, it's cool.
It's kind of cool because it doesn't
have the name on it. But they're Boss pedals. There's like no one's going to, but it's cool. It's very
cool. Also is, it's in the design of the same design of as the album.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a fun thing. And, you know, it's the heavyweight vinyl and it's got a nice sleeve.
Colored or splatter or mixed.
No, this particular one is just black.
Traditional.
No more black.
There's something in there. There's something
it's
inside.
Just little, it's just the little record store.
Okay. All right.
Sticker.
Wantonly pushing that back in. I didn't know if you knew there was something there that might get caught.
Alas. Okay,
I'm very concerned.
So that's what I did for Record Store Day. I got
your archive.
I did not see the Emerson, Lake & Palmer one, the Mike Oldfield that we talked about.
What was the LP one going to be?
I think it was a picture disc of Pictures and Exhibitions.
Oh, right. Yeah. I guess people wouldn't have ordered it. Well, maybe I'll check eBay. I'd be curious to see if they're out there. Not that I...
If the Mike Oldfield one, the Hergis Ridge,
that would be
if
cool.
that was available in the States, I might have bought that. I think there was, I like the British choices better. They had a Propaganda CD or an album of all these different remixes of all the songs from the first Propaganda album. And there was one other that Sylvian's Nine Horses. They put out on vinyl.
Okay.
A double album. And that's one of my favorites of his. So so that was it for Record Store. I'll go every year probably.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun. This is only my second that I've done because I was off vinyl for quite a while, but then my kids got into it, so I jumped back.
Yeah.
I truly only really want stuff that I can't get elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, that is kind of a fun collector's item sort of thing. I wouldn't necessarily need the new album by whoever that's going to get a wider release in 2 weeks.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And then from a news standpoint.
Yeah, we just a couple of quick news items before we get into it. Sad news, unfortunately. Mike Pinder, the last original member of the Moody Blues, keyboardist originally, mellotronist extraordinaire, Moody Blues, wrote many classics. This is part of the classic. I mean, what can you say? Unfortunately, he passed away.
He was what, 82 something?
He
like
was
that?
82. I believe he had been having issues. When they got inducted into the Hall of Fame, he was kind of being somewhat led around.
Okay.
And, you know, so there was concern at the time that there was a health problem. That was a while ago.
Yeah.
But
I was there.
Yeah. Oh, you were there when that happened. Did it look that way to you?
Not
or
to
you
me.
Didn't tell?
Not at the time.
Yeah. So I could be wrong, but there was a lot of when you watch a video on YouTube, there's a lot of chatter about, it could be this, it could be that. But You know, the way I always think of it, because some people, oh, are they prog? Are they not? Yeah, they're prog. I mean,
they
come from a time when you look back on that era, it's very narrow. People's views of what prog is, prog either is or isn't. Whereas now, where it's a big continuum, right?
It is.
So in that construct, yeah, they're prog. They're prog for the max. I mean, they introduced the mellotron.
The original Moody Blues, the Go Now, version.
But Knights in White Satin perked people's ears up, but it was really in search of the Lost Chord.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, they did a little bit of everything, but that was early, man. That was taking Sgt. Pepper and going in the prog direction and thrusting the mellotron on the world. So,
So
there's that
sad news.
Yes.
Talk is getting released as a box set.
And it's about box time.
Yeah. It's four CDs. It's the regular album, a rarities, which I think is really just like remixes or early versions of things, instrumental versions of stuff. So I don't think it's like it's reimagining any of the songs. I think it's just like before they were finished versions, which is okay. And then two live discs for one show. But it's expensive for what you get.
Right.
You know, I love the live show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
For, you know, I don't know, $70 for a live show. And I don't know if the booklet, it's because it's not a big lavish box. It's like a little box that's got four CDs in it and a little, each cardboard sleeve and then a little book. But I don't know if the book is like 2 pages long or 50 pages long. So
I mean, I'm glad the album's getting.
I love that album.
It's a very, very good album. I know it divides a lot of people, but the good,
the strong points
of the album far outweigh the weak points.
Yes,
I mean after
the Union thing and the Union tour, which was great.
Right.
Then they did this and that.
Great, at least externally.
Yes, then they were on Victory Records and the record company like went belly up the day the album was released and it just disappeared and into nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, which was too bad. And the tour was not that well attended, although I saw them at Madison Square Garden and it was great. It was very well attended, but that was like the last.
That was it.
The last.
Yeah. Like a last gasp.
MSG. And that was, 1994, 95.
Yeah.
So, and then you had
last bit of news, just quick, because it'll come out in dribs and drabs. But as far as the release of the songs, I'm sure David Gilmour is coming out with a brand new album, teased a new single, and the new single is out. The Pipers.
At the Gates of Dawn.
No, but it is. You know, it is clearly a look back in the cover. Is it called Lock and Strange or something? And
I don't know.
Yeah, Chaos and Strange. I'm completely butchering the title. On the video, at least, in big white letters will be the correct title of the album and any song title I'm butchering here. But it all just came out. It was all boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And, you know, a video for it.
Who's on it? Do you know?
Guy Pratt, I know, is on it.
Okay.
The most interesting thing is there was an interview and about the album because he was looking for a particular producer. And, you know, this guy came and listened to the demos and he's like, you know, does every song have to fade out? And, you know, he's like, do you have to have a guitar solo here and there and here? And you know, so people were like, what? You know, so Gilmour was like, yeah, I want to do something different. And so, you know, everybody was kind of like on forums and whatnot, just out there in the internet. Just kind of like, oh, you can't, it has to have guitar solo. Well, there's guitar solos on the single. It's okay. It's David Gilmour. It's, you know what you're getting in the tin for him these days.
Got
you
it.
Know, but it's, you know, more power to him. For somebody that, you know, supposedly sold his entire guitar collection for, you know, gazillions of dollars, which he completely donated all to charity. He does, you know, they have a shot of his studio and he's got some stuff still, or he went out and bought more stuff. I mean, that's the thing. The money keeps coming in. It doesn't stop. So, you know, it's just nice to see him doing that again. So, but anyways, that's the news.
Do you know when that's supposed to come out? Or are they going to drip and drag
June? I want to say June, but again, you're seeing the release date flash here. on the screen. Okay. I do not know. Like I said, at least from my perspective, it was like last week they said, okay, in 2 days, this is coming. And then in 3 days, like the video came. Okay. To me, that's a short period of time. For a lot of people, it's not. But you know, a week is a short period of time to announce it and get out the first thing. So that's all I know. But it sounded good. Check it out. It's on YouTube. It's out there.
I'll have to look at
that. There we go. All right. So on to our topic here again. It's more of a reminiscence about, you know, now you can get anything. And for a long time, even before streaming, you could go to Amazon or a lot of different online sites and
get
whatever you want. But obviously, particularly in the traditional vinyl days, and for us we're thinking more of the 70s and the 80s, you know,
late 70s, 80s,
for me, I'm more early 70s, and the radio and that kind of stuff too. It's, you know, I don't want to go down any of those cliche things because every generation has their time, but at least at that time on FM radio, there was a short period of time where you heard a lot of things that, you know, was like, wow, you know, people played 20-minute songs and that sold. There was a short period of time where prog was a commercial viable thing.
Yeah.
And of course the business tried to capitalize on it and just completely destroyed it. And made everything excess, which is how you got that reaction against with other musical forms.
But back in the day, I mean, aside from radio, I mean, and I would, you know, be searching and searching to listen, hear stuff on the radio and just like listen to the radio nonstop, just hoping that I'd hear a new song that I hadn't heard by an artist that I liked. But I would go shopping and I just use record stores. There was one in town called Trident Records where every record was $2.99, regardless of what it was, double album, triple album, single album, 12-inch single, whatever.
Was that the record store that was on what used to be what is now Donnelly Walk? Yeah. You know what?
I would go there all the time. Okay, and they just would have bins and I just look through.
I have to say this, okay? Because when I was setting up for this episode, I was thinking in my head, I'm like, what's a reminiscence? I always think about one thing, which is, and I'm not going to tell the story yet, but of going to a record store. And I'm like, I got to ask Jay if he knows what that record store is. And I'm like, it used to be on the whatever Donnelly Walk was. And it was just, there were a lot of used records, promos, all this stuff. And it was an amazing store. And I'm like, I can't remember the name. It was Trident.
Yes.
Go on. I'm sorry.
So it was great because the used records were not in any order. There was just bins of used records. And I would go in like every week in high school and just go through
a store situation.
Yeah. And just find stuff. And, you know, you're just always hoping to find that Elias of Sunhill or something that, you know, was out of print already after 3 years or something. And that's how I found half the albums that I bought, because, you know, they were cheap and they were used and half of them were out of print and hard to find. And it was great. That was my, and that for $3, I could take a chance on stuff. Because otherwise you were at the, you know, there were big record stores that had stuff, but they didn't have a lot of sales. We would go to like the Caldors, which was like the Kmart of the time, and get records there. But then when it came to finding rare stuff, we'd have to go to New Haven or up to Waterbury or record shows and like search out stuff. And those were always fun because we would go and they'd have like a promo of something and you knew the record was coming out and you'd be like canvassing the whole place, hoping that somebody had a promo copy of a new album that's not coming out for 2 weeks that you can't wait to hear.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know I talked about this before. I listened to a lot of radio when I was young. So, but it was all whatever was the time, you know, 70, 71, 72. So whatever was popular then, both pop and rock, you know, what's classic rock now. But every now and then I would hear something like, I remember hearing Ladies of the Road because that was the single and radio stations probably would play it once or twice. That was it. But it was different. You know, I distinctly remember hearing Roundabout on the radio and being like, that's different, yeah. Or a Toll tune. And, you know, and this was more early on, but I was still more like, oh, you know, what record do you want for your birthday? I want We're an American Band by Grand Funk Railroad, you know, because that's the one song that I can't get out of my head, you know, stuff. It would be like that.
Yeah.
Not the, ooh, what's that? Having said that, my brother bought, so I had two older brothers. One was really into music, and he was my eldest brother. So he was 4 years older than me. So even before I started buying albums, this would have been 71, 72, 73. He was getting albums.
Yeah.
Because he was in, you know, he was in junior high school. So he had Fragile, but like, you know, Seals and Crofts, you know, it was like all over the map. Zeppelin, so a lot. But I loved, you know, Fragile. I loved, you know, but at the time it was just another kind of music. There was no
label.
And you know, at that, well, yeah. When we were that age, and I'm talking, you know, I'm 8, 7, 8, 9, yeah. Friends, we're not talking about music,
yeah,
you know, no. We have it on, but that's not what, so who cares, right? You're just listening to it.
Yeah.
But then as I got older, you know, I would get into music, and my brother would go to a record store, and I'd save up money. I couldn't get a lot. You know, I have vivid memories of going to the department store Corvettes,
yep,
and seeing,
yeah,
the, we had too, an 8-track player at our house, and seeing the cassettes and the 8-tracks in green labels that they have, that is completely vivid memory. And this record store also had a booth where you could go and order, and they could do a decal, you know, iron on t-shirt for any band and album cover. And it was like, this is what I grew up with. And it was the wildest thing.
Yeah.
But that Trident record store, I remember vividly, I may have been 13, 14, but it was the first time I had a hangover. And my brother was like, I'm going to the record store. You want to go? And I was ill. He's like, oh, no, come. And so we went to this Trident Records. And I remember buying for $2.99 a box set of Soft Machine. It's called Third Echo, which was their BBC Sessions, for $2.99. And then I bought like four or five albums, Return to Forever Live. And I just bought them because it was a lot of albums, and that's the way I bought them. I didn't know anything. I bought by album cover. Or I've mentioned this too before. Oh my God, there's 2 10-minute songs on here. This must be great. And I was buying cheap stuff too, cutouts and promos.
Oh, yeah.
And we had an 8-track player at home, so those things were cheap. I mean, all my first King Crimson purchases were 8-tracks from Carl Graf's when they first opened, and they'd be like $1.99, $2.99. But all those new Haven record stores too, it was like just going in and just being overwhelmed by the amount of music and wanting to buy it all, because
to buy it all. And then of course, one of the negatives of from a prog fan in the States was all the bands that I liked were from England, and everything that I wanted was an import, and it was, you know, 3 times as much to get that, because to get an import back in the late 70s, early 80s, it was expensive, because they were shipping stuff over, and it was expensive. I'd be like, ah. I remember getting stuff, and it was like for the B-side of like something, because I was a completist even then, and it's like, I've never even heard this song, and I'm spending all this money for the import single of something, and, you know, not B-side is B-side for a reason most of the time.
what was the first, actually, I'd like, if there's 2 different answers, like what was the first album you ever bought with your own money? And what was the first prog album? Was it one and the same, or were they different?
No, because I started as like a Beatles fan from my friends, right? My sisters were into the Eagles and the California Scene and Fleetwood Mac and all that stuff, which was great. But then my contemporaries at the time were into the Beatles and, you know, American prog, right? So there was like and Pink Floyd, right? So we'd be like in the basement of my buddy's house, and we'd be listening to the Beatles, and we'd be listening to Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin and, you know, the stuff of the times in 1977 or 76, right? And so my first two albums that I got, this is how late in the game I was doing this. I was 14 or something. I got Led Zeppelin 4.
Nice.
And Foreigner's first album.
Oh,
just
good.
Just to, you know, try it out at the time.
And, you know, speaking of news, we forgot Foreigner is going to be inducted. But Ian McDonald is going to be part of their posthumously, you know.
Yeah,
I think it's great. He always straddled more of the rock side than the prog side, you know. But you can't deny his impact on Crimson. Yeah. So anyways.
So then I think the first Yes album, and we talked about this in our very first episode that I got, was Tormato. Because by then I was in high school and my friends in high school were into Yes. And so they kept talking about this band. And so I had the Columbia House, you know, get
10
records for a dollar and then buy 8 records over the next 2 years or something. And Tormato was like the one Yes album they had. So I got that. And then from that, my friends for my birthday got me Yes songs.
Good friends.
And that was... That did it.
The rest is history, as they say.
Yeah.
Cool. Wow.
How about you?
Well, like you, people bought me albums for like birthdays. Like my uncle would always ask me, and I was into the Beatles. So, you know, one year it was like, oh, we're talking young, 6 or 7, you know, I want Hard Day's Night, you know, and then the next time it was like, oh, Magical Mystery Tour, you know, and then, you know, some years he would just buy something. But the first album I ever bought myself was, it's funny thing of the Beatles, Billy Preston, and the album's called Everybody Loves Some Kind of Music. And I bought it because the single, it was like Space Racer, one of his really funky instrumental singles that was all over the radio. And at the time I was like, that is such a good song. Oh, it'd be so cool to have an album like that. Of course, other songs really aren't like that, you know. It's a good album, and I still listen to it to this day because he's great, great keyboard player, and it's just kind of funky R&B music, so I like that. But the first prog album I ever bought—that's a tough one, you know. I'm thinking it was either because I got into prog and all of a sudden it was like birthday time and I was like, oh, I want this. It either had to be Brain Salad Surgery or Thick as a Brick. And the reason I say that is because there was a time where those two albums just blew my mind, and my brother either had them or borrowed them from someone, and I was able to fit them on a 90-minute cassette. And I think it was in 5th or 6th grade, and that's all I listened to during the summer.
Yeah.
Was just, you know, two freaking amazing albums.
That's crazy.
And those were probably the first prog ones I bought. But what happened soon after that, just to keep it back to record stores, is do you remember the airport in Fairfield, that record store? It was on Black Rock Turnpike across from what is Dutchess now. So where Bagel King is in that.
Yes.
It was called EARPORT.
They had a ton of cutouts.
People don't live in the area.
Was this 80s? Like, no. I remember buying Animation there by
It would have been late 70s, early 80s. I'm talking about the late 70s, either 78 or 79. I have a vivid memory of buying Tarkus and Young Person's Guide to King Crimson there. And I remember seeing Young Person's Guide, and I saw the front of the album cover, and it was like, and I was like, King Crimson? And I was familiar with their studio albums, but I didn't know anything about this. And I looked at the back, and I'm like, I have most of these songs, but I don't care. This is the coolest thing I ever saw. And I had gone in there wanting Tarkus, so I bought them both. And
Well, that was my first intro to Crimson, was A Young Person's Guide to King Crimson.
And the book. Oh, my God. That, again, pre-internet age, and there's no books on King Crimson. You might get a line in a book or two, No one know who they were.
Oh, I remember I was in the Midwest at my grandfather's in, like, 1980, and the record store there had it. And, of course, it was an import. There was no – I don't think – that it was still in print in America.
No.
So yeah, so I bought the import of Young Person's Guide, and that was great. That whole book and the just from 69 to 74, right? The amount of space they covered in that whole thing, and the revolving door of the band.
Well, that's the thing. That was the first band I like that did that. That I heard. You know, I had to be in fifth or sixth grade, and my brother had been into ELP, so I was very heavily into ELP at the time, and Works was coming out and all that. And he borrowed In the Court from someone, and he said, well, the Greg Lake's on it, so it must be cool. And I remember he put that on, and Schizoid Man came on, and I was like, oh my, you know, I was like, what? I'm like, I love this. No, and then I'm like, we have to go to the mall, and I have to get something of King Crimson. Well, I'm a kid. The only thing I could afford was a $2.99.
Right.
Because 8-track tape. It was USA because it had Schizoid Man on it. So I bring it home and we put it in, and I'm like, what? You know, they try to go to the next track, and the way, and I got to Schizoid Man, and I was like, And you don't know it's not the same band.
Yeah.
I don't know any of this stuff.
And it, I'm like, it's an 8-track. Yeah, that's got, I know, just there's the nothing.
Yeah, and I'm like, this isn't Greg Lake. And then I listen to it more. I'm like, but actually, I like this better than that. But yeah. What is going on? There was nowhere to go for information. It wasn't like it wasn't like I knew someone in the neighborhood who knew everything about music. Find it out in dribs and drabs. I had no idea. That blew my freaking mind. I'm like, this is the same band. They're doing this song, but then there's this Lark's Tongues and Aspic, which is so. Then I was like, we got to go back to the mall because I saw other ones there. So then I'm like, this one has
my paper route money.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
Orders.
And no, and it's like this one has that Lark's Tongue song on here, and then this one has a lament song I like. And so that's how I ended up with, and then all of a sudden I found Red. And I'm like, none of those songs are on the live one, but this one has a date of the same year. And then I was like, what? You know, Crimson started with 8-tracks. Yeah. And then my brother went to school in Philadelphia, and another store that had a profound impact on me was Plastic Fantastic, which is a well-known Philadelphia store. Fripp played there, did Fripp and Chronics. It's like what a Cutler's would have been, you know, just very, very well-known in the area for years and years, and they had a lot of cutouts too, but they just had a lot of stuff. And that's
so, speaking of Cutler's, so there was always going to Cutler's, which is in New Haven, a record store,
which
was around forever and ever,
even past the time when record stores and CD stores were not anything, and it was still here.
Yeah,
this was before the
big.
But
he liked Rhymes
records.
Better, which was
I think Rhymes was, had more of the imports and
more of the bootlegs.
Right, they had the bootlegs to the live shows.
And then we had in our, pardon me, neighborhood, we had a store called New Music.
New Music, NU.
NU, yeah.
Wasn't it NU?
NU Music.
Yeah.
New which music. Was, I would go there all the time. And of course, being a prog person, it was not really prog oriented at all. It was more new music, punk and new wave and alternative, what became alternative. But I mean, I would get my OMD 12 inches at the same time I would beg him to get me the new John and Meg Ellis single.
I love that store.
Scott would be like, why are you still listening to Yes? And I'd be like, well, I'm still getting the OMD album and the, you know, the Talk Talk or whatever. But then Scott sold to Chris
Rasmussen, owner of
Secret Sounds. And Secret Sounds then moved across the street. And I would go in there all the time, and Chris would give me the same spiel that Scott gave me. Why are you still listening to you?
I love Chris.
But then Chris would get, I mean, he'd have all these promos and imports and all this stuff, and I'd like, that's how I found Porcupine Tree.
Right.
He just had this Porcupine Tree thing, and he probably said, oh, you'd probably like that.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I Chris was great. I lived right around the corner from that store. I mean, I walked to that store, and he would get anything I wanted. He would get, you know, he'd razz you about certain stuff, but he was totally into music, and he got it that like you were into stuff, and that's cool. But there was a lot of stuff we were both into. I mean, I loved Todd Rundgren in Utopia, and he grew up with that too. Yeah. And you know, he was very knowledgeable about the prog stuff. I do, you know, I was kind of close-minded at that point about music. You know, I was just more focused on, well, raising kids, and then like my only space was for prog. But I feel like I missed a lot of music that he had. He, you know, you could go there and see a show.
He'd have these
very cool in-store shows. And I think I went to a couple, but there was a lot there that I just felt like I didn't avail myself to that. But, you know, instead of just endlessly searching for prog in a wasteland at the time, you know, I wasn't latching onto something. I latched more onto jazz, to be completely honest. And again, you know, price wise, he would just give you the best price. And even if you ordered something, like his markup was so low, you know. Another one who would do that was another iconic store, Sally's Place in Westport.
Oh, Sally was great.
Now, Sally was amazing. Now, that store was mainly jazz for me. I loved it. And she was so knowledgeable.
She would find whatever you wanted.
But anything you wanted, she would get. And she was the sweetest person in the world.
She was great. And she knew her stuff. And she was just all, she was very, she was very cool. She was first at Record and Tape of Westport, right?
No,
then she moved to Sally's.
No,
then she created her own Sally's.
She was in Klein's, the department store.
That's how
she ran the music store department in Klein's, and then she moved up
and did Sally's.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember her saying the thing. She owned that, like she owned that spot, not in Klein's when she moved.
Yeah.
And then I remember, you know, she was just the sweetest person. She was into everything, and she would want to know about it. She'd want to know why you were choosing something. But she had this funny thing where it would have like the percentage, like if I pay this, and it was funny. You'd see the dial and she'd be like, well, I think, you know, I need to make X percent. I'm like, that's cool. That's fine. And she would do the dial. She's like, how does this sound? I'm like, that's great. You know? And the release days used to be Tuesday.
Yeah.
So
Tuesday was my big day.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, like I said, I was so close to Secret Sounds and I could just walk there on release day. And Sally's would be something. And then you mentioned the Record and Tape of Westport, which was another one where I would go there on release day.
Yeah.
You know, I remember so many times going.
And they had
Krista's,
a Ticketmaster there too. So that
I stood out for many, many Grateful Dead concerts at Record and Tape of Westport, I got to tell you. But Chris would sometimes, he'd be like, it didn't get here yet.
Yeah.
You know,
I'd be so bummed out.
I'm like, do I walk home or do I just hang out? You know? And he's like, did you see the truck anywhere up the road? I'm like, not. He's like, it's probably going to be like an hour. This is
weird
before
freaks.
Of course, you know, because I wanted it right then. It was like, anyways.
All right.
So we could go on forever. Anyways, but we'd love to hear anybody else's reminiscences. Obviously, we're focused kind of geographically in the Connecticut area, and or except for Plastic Fantastic in Philly. We didn't even talk about the New York ones, which we at some point.
Yeah, and the New York ones and Waterbury. But
anyways, until next time, Prague will find a way.
If you wanted to.